This is the News Gazette for Friday, February the 6th. Kathy reading front page, first article. Fledgling Project by Luke Taylor. When local educators began looking at options for their own children's schooling and didn't find anything that fit, they had an idea. Why not start our own school? Teachers Jennifer Aller and Todd Van Steenhuis had been thinking along that track for some time before they joined what became the board for the soon-to-launch Redtail Academy Middle School for Boys. Other board members include President and Founder Cisa Ponrene, Amy Somrak, Carl Radnitzer, and Hideyuki Tanaka. Aller and Van Steenhuis credit Ponrene for providing the motivation and organization to make the dream a reality, but it's still been a learning experience. After all, they'd never started a school before. We're learning as we're going, Van Steenhuis said. Fortunately, we do all have education backgrounds and understand that side of it, so that part isn't as big of a deal. But, you know, do we need a bank account, a lawyer? As it turns out, yes. Even in forming a board, the members found themselves researching bylaws and insurance and financing and advertising. Then it was figuring out a physical location, which often meant just driving around scouting out community centers and churches. Aller compared the process to cold calling in person. Fortunately, they were able to find the perfect spot with the Unitarian Universalist Church of Urbana-Champaign. It's on a bus line near a library and has a playground. It's also a really strong ideological and philosophical fit for as far as a social justice perspective, Aller said. It's that acceptance of everyone, come as you are, you know. The church will also allow Redtail students to build raised garden beds outside for growing produce. That's the kind of project Redtail educators hope to prioritize, rather than spending all of the time in the classroom. They plan to have students build raised beds, garden, and sell the produce at the farmer's market, teaching them a variety of hands-on skills alongside basic business and math. It's interdisciplinary learning, Aller said. You learn math embedded in social studies and science projects you're doing, so it's not compartmentalized. The learning is embedded in many types of practical things. Redtail Academy will focus on boys and non-binary children in the middle school age group in part because the campus middle school for girls already serves the other niche. Additionally, Aller and Van Steenhuis said that removing the pressures of maturing at different rates from and dealing with children of the opposite gender can help kids focus on learning. While they and other board members have history in traditional education and understand its strengths for some students, they don't believe it works for all students and want to provide an alternative option. There is a strong need for a place where they can just be around kids who are like them, Van Steenhuis said. Ponrene said she's excited to help meet the needs of the community with a school focused on accessibility in all aspects of the word. They plan to place tuition rates on a sliding scale that caps out at $12,000 to avoid prohibitive costs for any family. We have a great team, Ponrene said. We're intentional and thoughtful about the choices we're making. Redtail Academy has two upcoming open house events for folks to see the prospective location, meet the board, and get an idea of the future of the school, which is set to open this August. The first will be from 12:30 to 2 p.m. on Saturday, and the second will be from 6:30 to 8 p.m. on February 13th, both at the Unitarian Universalist Church on Green Street. The Redtail Board asks that attendees try to RSVP on the school's website to get a possible head count, but Aller said just to come anyway if you're unable to respond. This next article, Vermilion County Pier Court, beer-packed vintage fridge up for auction. Local Icebox Club restored it for a good cause by Jennifer Bailey. Get ready to place a bid for the latest Icebox Club restoration project. This refinished 1955 General Electric refrigerator, decorated in honor of the former Fecker Brewing Company of Danville, will be a featured item at tonight's Vermilion County Pier Court auction. The group's 26th refrigerator project to date, put together with the blessing of the Fecker family, features the original Fecker's high-grade beer name and logo on the exterior and is packed with beer inside. The Fecker family brewed a limited edition batch of their original Fecker's beer for the lucky bidder. Trucelli Collision Repair helped with the paint job, while Automotive Color and Supply provided the paint. The Pier Court auction begins at 7 p.m. today at Turtle Run Banquet Center on Liberty Lane in Danville, with the doors opening at 6 p.m. Paul Schirmerschein will be the auctioneer, while Tom Wagoner will MC. All proceeds benefit the Peer Court, a program that has helped first-time juvenile offenders in Vermilion County since 1993. It provides an alternative to the traditional justice system where youth can take responsibility for negative actions through a court process led by their peers. Participants receive meaningful sentences that encourage accountability and personal growth while benefiting the community, according to Peer Court Executive Director Katie Osterber. And there is a picture of a bright red refrigerator, and it has Fecker's beer on the front, and it says Fecker Brewing Company, Danville, Illinois. It's really pretty. It will be brewing company closed in 1939. Bids will be taken for it at tonight's Peer Court auction. Episode 17, As Heard On, airing from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday on WDWS. 45 years later, Paul Lewis still feels uneasy around big crowds and prefers to be seated at the corner table with his back to the wall when out to dinner. These are the after effects of the Homer High grad, Champaign financial advisor, and Sydney resident being taken hostage with the 51 others at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran on orders from Ayatollah Khomeini, and not being freed until 144 days later. On Thursday's episode of the News Gazette Radio, the Marine Corps veteran shared his thoughts on the latest uprising against the Islamic Republic by the Iranian people, one that's resulted in thousands of protesters being killed and thousands more in prison. Given his history, Lewis has paid close attention to the news every night. He expects the U.S. to enter the fray, preferably without boots on the ground, before long, given President Donald Trump's Thursday warning that Iran's supreme leader should be very worried. Said Lewis, "Honestly, I'm optimistic or hopeful that they will overthrow these people, but I don't think they're going to be able to do it without any help because they don't have any guns." How is Campus Inc. able to have for sale online a t-shirt commemorating Keaton Weigler's 46-point performance last month against Purdue before the Illini team bus had made it back to Champaign? And that was signed by U of I grad. Stephen Farag, the 34-year-old CEO of Champaign-based Campus Inc. and the NIL store it operates for Illinois and 159 other universities, explained the process on Thursday's show. "We have our thumb on the pulse of every game going on in college sports to monitor in real time everything that's happening. So the second we see a buzzer beater or something cool, our artists are whipping up something in 20 to 30 minutes. In this case, I just texted Keaton and said, 'Hey, here you go. What do you think?' Weigler loved it and was on the bus home when he gave the green light," Farag said. "Athletes get a cut of all sales of their merchandise with checks going out every 2 weeks," Farag said. "Each one has their own online platform to monitor the sales." This article on page 3, website claims it'll connect consumers to drug discounts. The Trump administration on Thursday launched TrumpRx.gov, a website it says will help patients buy prescription drugs directly at a discounted rate at a time when health care and the cost of living are growing concerns for Americans. "You're going to save a fortune," President Donald Trump said at the site's unveiling, "and this is also good for overall health care." The government-hosted website is not a platform for buying medications. Instead, it's set up as a facilitator, pointing Americans to drug makers' direct-to-consumers' websites where they can make purchases. It also provides coupons to use at pharmacies. The site launches with over 40 medications, including weight loss drugs such as Ozempic and Wegovy. The site is part of a larger effort by the Trump administration to show it's tackling the challenges for high costs. Affordability has emerged as political vulnerability for Trump and his Republican allies going into November's midterm elections, as Americans remain worried about the cost of housing, groceries, utilities, and other staples of middle-class identity. Trump stressed that the lower prices were made possible by his pressuring of pharmaceutical companies on prices, saying he demanded that they charge the same costs in the U.S. as in other nations. He said prescription drug costs will increase in foreign countries as a result. "We're tired of subsidizing the world," said Trump at an event on the White House campus that lasted roughly 20 minutes. The administration is touting substantial discounts, though it's unclear just how much impact the changes will have for family budgets. The site includes the disclaimer that prices may be even lower for people with insurance, and it lists the out-of-pocket price, Also, some consumers might be able to use available generics that cost less than brand name medications. Still, Dr. Mehmet Oz, administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, hyped the website as being transformative. He said the lower prices for Ozempic and Wegovy could cause the country to collectively lose £100 million this year. This is from Capital News, Illinois. Illinois Attorney General wins state's first civil hate crime suit by Jenna Swikert. Amid a flurry of lawsuits filed in federal court against the Trump administration, Attorney General Kwame Raoul's office won a historic first in Illinois last month by successfully trying the state's first civil hate crime lawsuit. Chad Hampton and his mother, Cheryl Hampton, who are white, were found to have engaged in intimidation and disorderly conduct towards their neighbor, Gregory Johnson, who is black, according to Raoul's office. The Hamptons allegedly lynched an effigy of Johnson facing his home after Johnson had called the police on Chad Hampton for allegedly damaging his lawn. Court filings show the Hamptons also displayed a racial slur, swastikas, and a Confederate flag aimed at their neighbor's home. "This behavior is shocking, racist, and un-American. I appreciate the judge's order that shows such despicable behavior will not be tolerated in our state," Rouse said in the release. The Attorney General's office was first given authority to try such a case in 2018. The legislature amended the Illinois Hate Crime Act to allow the Attorney General to file civil lawsuits against residents for alleged hate crimes. Carroll County Circuit Court Judge Jerry Kane ordered the Hamptons to each pay a civil penalty of $5,000 and damages of $45,000 to Johnson. The lawsuit filed in 2022 details a record of behavior Raoul said was aimed at intimidating Johnson dating back to 2020. At the time of the incidents, the Hamptons and Johnson resided in Carroll County in northwest Illinois. Johnson had repeatedly contacted the local police department in Savannah, Illinois, about the Hamptons' aggressive conduct toward him, the lawsuit says, stating that Johnson accused Chad Hampton of damaging his lawn with weed killer. After Hampton was charged with a misdemeanor for the damage, the lynched effigy appeared in the Hamptons' front yard, which Raoul labeled as an intimidation tactic and threat of racial violence in the complaint. Hate crimes in Illinois have been on the rise since 2016, but spiked in the last 4 years, according to FBI data collected from college, city, county, state, and federal agencies. Over 50% of reported hate crimes were due to race or ethnicity. Reports of hate crimes have increased across the nation as well, according to the FBI data. "With dramatic increases in reported hate crimes, I will continue to use all of the tools at my disposal to prosecute hate crimes and send the message that hate has no place in Illinois," Raoul said in a statement. And in Campus Town, Korean fried chicken chain, a second fat sandwich to open in an apartment building by Jana Wersma. Two eateries are hoping to open at the corner of First and Green Streets just ahead of the fall semester. One is already a part of the Campus Town restaurant scene, while the other will be a new addition. Bonchon, a Korean fried chicken restaurant, has signed a lease at 60 East Green Street, as has Fat Sandwich Company, said Andy Hudson with the University Group. "I believe Bonchon would like to open up this summer, definitely ahead of the fall semester," Hudson said. Bonchon, named for the Korean word for my hometown, has nearly 500 locations worldwide, including 150 in the United States. At present, its closest location is Bloomington. Fat Sat Sandwich Company told the News Gazette that it is expanding, not relocating, and plans to open its new location around the beginning of August. The restaurant, which has a shop at 502 East John Street in Campus Town, has been a part of the community since 2008. "It's going to be a larger space and larger menu with new items towards sweets and drinks," the business said of the Green Street location. According to a building permit on file with the city, commercial spaces are located in the ground floor of the five-story building, while apartments and amenities occupy the second and fifth stories. The University Group received its occupancy permit for the apartments at this site in mid-January, just in time for second semester, Hudson said. "We have occupancy for the entire building, but are still finishing up some common areas, and there is still exterior work going on at the corner of First and Green," he added. And from the Urbana City Council, interim public works director set to become permanent. The city's interim public works director is set to have the word interim removed from his title. The City Council's agenda for Monday includes a vote to approve the mayoral appointment of Vincent Gustafson as Public Works Director for a term ending on or before June 30, 2027. Council members voted in June 2025 to appoint Gustafson, previously the Deputy Public Works Director for Operations, to the interim role after the departure of Tim Cohen. Vincent, known as Vince, Gustafson has served the city since June of 2004, city officials said. He began his career as a building maintenance worker and was promoted to public facilities supervisor in 2012, public facilities manager in 2016, and deputy public works director for operations in 2019. And the Analog Wine Library. Urbana business remains open despite the building being for sale by Jana Wiersma. A downtown property that is currently home to a wine bar is for sale. The roughly 0.6-acre property at 129 North Ray Street currently has an asking price of $950,000, according to a listing on Craigseek.com. Commercial realtor Jill Guth, whose firm is listing the site, said that Analog Wine Library continues to operate and will do so into the foreseeable future. With a pending redevelopment proposal to be issued by the City of Urbana for the adjacent properties to the north, we wanted to make sure any developers knew this property was available to enhance the footprint of a possible redevelopment project, she said. The property at 129 North Race Street is owned by an LLC associated with Matt Cho, while business records show that Analog is owned by Dong Hwa Kim. Cho was involved with the development of Analog through his business Cake Design Development. In addition to Analog, Cho also leases second-floor office space to another tenant on a month-to-month basis, according to the property listing. Analog's lease currently runs through February. As for the parcels Guth mentioned to the north, Community Development Director and Zoning Administrator Olivia Jovine said that the city has yet to issue a request for redevelopment proposals for the land it owns at 205 and 131 North Ray Street and will likely do so in early summer. The city purchased the two parcels from the Urbana School District for $113,000 in April of 2024. The 0.82-acre property at 25-211 North Race Street was previously home to the old Gene F. Burkholder Administrative Service Center, which was demolished in fall of 2025. The Burkholder Center is now located at 1101 East University Avenue. The Urbana Adult Education Center, also previously located at this site, is now at 1106 South Vine Street. The property at 131 North Race Street is a 0.14-acre parcel of parking directly south of the former Burkholder office site. And the top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with. On Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing ltaylor@news-gazette.com. Bartender April Moran has been in the business for over 20 years, and she's still loving the teamwork and social aspects of her job. Your customers become like family to you. We check on each other and bring meals to each other, she said, and I love creating new cocktails and being creative with that. As of the last few years, she's at the Publisher in Bethany, so she's had a heavy focus on old fashions, a classic for the whiskey and bourbon focused bar. On the less traditional side, she also likes mixing chocolate, Crown Royale, and root beer for a drink that tastes like a Tootsie Roll. Moran described the Publisher as a small town bar that's a great place for private parties, also featuring karaoke events and pool tables. The bar got its name because it's located in the old home of a now-defunct newspaper, the Bethany Echo. Today, Moran says it's a lot like Cheers. Her favorite memories of her time there surround Ronald McDonald House fundraisers, the bar hosts raising nearly $25,000 in the past several years. If you have questions or comments or suggestions, you can email Jim Rossell at jrossell@news-gazette.com. And some history for Champaign County. Area history in 1976. No charges have been filed yet against a Champaign man who is a suspect in connection with the fatal shootings of two men in downtown Champaign, the state's attorney's office said. Robert Hunter, 26, of Champaign, is currently being held on a $100,000 bond in the Champaign City Jail on an outstanding warrant for aggravated kidnapping and rape. In 2011, pulled from a retirement as Parkland College president to head a much larger community college system in St. Louis, Zalima Harris is really retiring this time, as of June 30th. Denise Kacher, chairwoman of the St. Louis Community College Trustees, said the board tried to talk Harris into staying, but there was a deal breaker. "We're sorry to lose her after all of our attempts to keep. But in the end, though she wavered, we didn't win against her 5-year-old granddaughter in California," she said. International History Today's highlight on February 6, 1952. Britain's King George VI, 56, died at Sandringham House in Norfolk, England. He was succeeded as monarch by his 25-year-old eldest daughter, who became Queen Elizabeth II. On this date in 1778, during the American Revolutionary War, the United States won official recognition and military support from France with the signing of the Treaty of Alliance in Paris. In 1862, during the Civil War, Fort Henry in Tennessee fell to Union forces. In 1899, a peace treaty between the United States and Spain was ratified by the U.S. Senate. The treaty ended the Spanish-American War and ceded the Philippines, Puerto Rico, and Guam to the United States. In 1921, The Kid, Charlie Chaplin's first feature-length film, was released across the United States. In 1998, Washington National Airport was renamed Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport, honoring the former president on his 87th birthday. In 2013, toy maker Hasbro Incorporated announced that Monopoly fans had voted online to add a cat token to the board game, replacing the iron. In 2022, Queen Elizabeth II celebrated the 70th anniversary of her ascendance to the British throne, an unprecedented reign that made her a symbol of stability in the United Kingdom. In 2023, a powerful 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck Turkey and Syria, toppling thousands of buildings and trapping residents under mounds of rubble. The death toll would eventually surpass 50,000. Plant-based dyes no longer count as artificial colors, by Janelle Alessio. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is relaxing the rules that restrict when food companies can claim their products have no artificial colors. The agency announced Thursday that food labels may claim to have no artificial colors when they are free of petroleum-based dyes, even when they contain dyes derived from natural sources such as plants. In the past, the FDA has allowed companies to make those claims only when products had no added color whatsoever, the agency said in a statement. The move is another step toward the Trump administration's aim to phase out synthetic dyes from the nation's food supply. In a joint statement, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and FDA Commissioner Marty Makary said the move would encourage companies to switch to natural rather than synthetic colors if they can claim their products contain no artificial colors. "We are taking away that hindrance and making it easier for companies to use these colors in the foods our families eat every day," Makary said in a statement. Kennedy and Makary have urged U.S. companies to voluntarily remove synthetic dyes from their products, and many food makers such as PepsiCo and Nestle have complied. In addition, some states have taken steps to ban artificial dyes from school meals. The move drew praise from the Consumer Brands, a trade group for packaged foods, which said all natural ingredients should continue to follow a rigorous science and risk-based evaluation process. "This is a positive example of the FDA taking the lead on ingredient safety and transparency," Sarah Gallo, the group's senior vice president, said in a statement. But the label change could mislead consumers, says Sarah Sorcher, director of regulatory affairs for the Center for Science in the Public Interest, an advocacy group. "It would allow a claim of no artificial colors for any color additive that is not a petroleum-based certified color, including potential harmful additives such as titanium dioxide." Also Thursday, the FDA said it had approved a new natural dye, beetroot red, and expanded the use of spirulina extract, a color derived from algae that provides a blue hue in foods. The FDA currently allows roughly 36 natural dyes in food products. The agency banned a controversial dye known as red number 3 last year and has proposed banning a rarely used hue, orange B. The agency also said it would review the 6 remaining petroleum-based dyes frequently used in the U.S. food supply: green number 3, red number 40, yellow number 5, yellow number 6, blue number 1, and blue number 2. Now that might get rid of the blue cereal. And it has a picture of 2 bowls of Trix cereal. The one with artificial colors have bright colors in them: bright red, bright blue, bright yellow. And then the natural colors are Looks like a kind of a brownish purple and a light red and a light yellow. So they won't be as bright. And under foreign diplomacy, last U.S.-Russia nuclear arms pact has expired. Putin would like an extension, but Trump seeks a new deal involving China. The Kremlin said Thursday it regretted the expiration of the last remaining nuclear arms pact between Russia and the United States, while U.S. President Donald Trump declared he was against keeping its limits and wants a better deal. The pact's termination left no caps on the two largest atomic arsenals for the first time in more than half a century, fueling fears of an unconstrained nuclear arms race. Russian President Vladimir Putin last year declared his readiness to stick to the treaty's limits for another year if Washington followed suit, but Trump has ignored the offer and argued that he wants China to be a part of the new pact, something Beijing has rebuffed. Rather than extend New START, a badly negotiated deal by the United States that, aside from everything else, has been grossly violated, we should have our nuclear experts work on a new, improved, and modernized treaty that can last long into the future, Trump posted on his Truth Social network. Putin discussed the pact's expiration with Chinese leader Xi Jinping on Wednesday, noting the U.S. failure to respond to his proposal to extend its limits and saying that Russia will act in a balanced and responsible manner based on a thorough analysis of the security situation, Kremlin advisor Yuri Ushakov said. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peshkov said Moscow views the treaty's expiration Thursday negatively and regrets it. He said Russia will maintain its responsible, thorough approach to stability when it comes to nuclear weapons, adding that, of course, it will be guided primarily by its national interests. Peshkov emphasized that if we receive constructive responses, we will certainly conduct a dialogue. With the end of the treaty, Moscow remains ready to take decisive military technical measures to counter potential additional threats to the national security, the Russian Foreign Ministry said. Even as New START expires, the U.S. and Russia agreed Thursday to re-establish high-level military-to-military dialogue, allowing a meeting between senior officials from both sides in Abu Dhabi, the U.S. military command in Europe said. The link was suspended in 2021 as relations between Moscow and Washington grew increasingly strained before Russia sent troops into Ukraine in February of 2022. New START, signed in 2010 by then-President Barack Obama and his Russian counterpart Dmitry Medvedev, restricted each side to no more than 1,550 nuclear warheads on no more than 700 missiles and bombers deployed and ready for use. It was originally supposed to expire in 2021, but was extended for 5 more years. The pact envisioned sweeping on-site inspections to verify compliance, although they stopped in 2020 because of the COVID-19 pandemic and never resumed. In February 2023, Putin suspended Moscow's participation, saying Russia couldn't allow U.S. inspections of its nuclear sites at a time when Washington and its NATO allies have openly declared Moscow's defeat in Ukraine as their goal. At the same time, the Kremlin emphasized it wasn't withdrawing from the pact altogether, pledging to respect its caps on nuclear weapons. In offering September to abide by the New START's limits for a year to buy time for both sides to negotiate a successor agreement, Putin said the treaty's expiration would be destabilizing and could fuel nuclear proliferation. New START was the last remaining pact in a long series of agreements between Moscow and Washington to limit their nuclear arsenals, starting with the SALT I in 1972. And that'll be all we have time for today. I hope you have a nice weekend. Stay tuned for part two and have a good day.